Welcome to the Realm. I'm Dr. D, and I bring the strategy.
And I'm Dr. K, and I bring the psychology. We are business psychologists and your guides to the executive realm, where we bring strategy and psychology together so that you can bring your best
to the C-suite, your teams, and your customers. Today, we'll be talking about life after COVID. This is part one of our post-COVID workplace series, where we'll explore the potential workplace pitfalls and risks, along with opportunities created and redeeming strategies to help you and your organization emerge stronger. Let's get to work. So, Dr. K, how do we prepare for the post-COVID workplace? Will people even want to go back to work? Will they want to go back to work the old way?
For some people out there, this has been a blessing in disguise, depending on what their personal life was like, also what their interpersonal relationships were at work, what their work life was like. Maybe they were nervous, social anxiety, what have you, in the office itself. So for them being with their family or at home in the comforts of their own home, they had the ability to bring more to the organization.
Yeah, given the amount of time, you think of just commuting alone, how much time out of people's work day mm-hmm. or productive day that eats up, you know, being able to just wake up in the morning, get dressed, sit down in front of the computer, mm-hmm. eliminate all that stress straight out of your life. It makes a big difference.
Absolutely. You know, are they just driving to their office? Are they, flying somewhere at that?
Absolutely. I know organizations tend to be sticky in the way they want to do things. Yes. And COVID has clearly forced a shift in the way people engage with work. It's mm-hmm. forced organizations that would be otherwise reluctant to allow people to work from home. It made a requirement that they had to work from home for many. There are, of course, people in the workforce that just don't have the opportunity to work from home, service industry jobs, manufacturing jobs, and the like. But do you think organizations are going to force people to try to go back to the old way of doing business? And if they do, is that going to be a successful strategy?
There is possibility organizations will want to go back to the old way. That is what they knew. That is what they feel most comfortable with. That's what they understood. I also do believe that with how quickly we had to go from everybody just, gallivanting around to working from home, organizations were able to put together a strategy, work from home life, some people coming into the office, some people not coming into the office. And the organizations were able to just say, here we go. This is our new plan. And surprisingly, they have found, or at least I'm hoping that they have found, that it can work. It's what do they do now? People own their office buildings. Do we just let it sit there? Do you sell it off? Those kind of things. If they provided food, being that I work with people in the entertainment industry, they were often provided food. Now that, they will save money not providing food if they're not having people come into the offices right. and stuff like that. So I think it's going to be a let's sit down, see where this COVID pandemic situation is going to end, and let's make decisions. And I think it will be decisions that will have to be made periodically. They're going to be changing over time.
I wonder if organizations can even possibly be successful if they try to go back to the old way. My take is there is a new shift in the world. Mm-hmm. There are people who enjoy working from home, and there are and are frankly more productive from working from home. And then mm-hmm. there are those that are more productive working in the office. I believe organizations will have to take a firm stance in allowing flexibility and being transparent and allowing people to have that flexibility. People are going to want to live in cheaper parts of the country. Here in California, I know you're in Texas, and people in California want the opportunity to live in a less expensive place. And there are even organizations out there that are saying, look, if you move somewhere and take a small pay cut, we will give you a bonus and help you move to a place that has a lower cost of living. And net net, it's good for the organization. It's good for the employee. But there are those folks who need that in-person office interaction. And I think the mm-hmm. important thing is balancing between the two, giving people flexibility to work remotely. Everybody's clearly had to get comfortable with it over the last year.
Right.
But in the post-COVID world, will organizations who try to force a paradigm back to the old way cause employees to decide to look for other jobs and move? Or will it, frankly, increase turnover in organizations if organizations don't handle it well?
Definitely a possibility with the turnover rate, especially for what the pandemic has created. The social anxiety, the fear of being, not even the social anxiety part, people might just be craving to be around people, but it's the fear of getting it. It's the, now a lot of families have had to move in together or move closer together and or just help each other more. So if I had a parent that was close by and then my office was, you know, come into the office now, how do I go see my, you know, my dad who's in his 80s?
Right.
How do I do that if I'm in the office with other people? So I think it's going to, again, it's going to be a, how are the numbers looking? How it's talking to the employees. How do you feel? Are you missing coming in? Can we work together? I think it's going, instead of the organization itself creating all the regulations, it may be beneficial for the companies or organizations to talk to their employees, better understand where they're coming from. If your employees are scared and they're walking into the office, you know, anxiety, what have you, may cause a block in being able to work to the level that they're expected to work. It may not. Some people could get back into the office and, you know, party, free time. However, a lot of it's possible forcing employees to come back to work too soon could cause damage.
Yeah. This is probably the way the workforce should have been evolving anyway. Again, many organizations have already started to move this way. Mm-hmm. And having policies and procedures in place in organizations to allow people the flexibility with structure. So say, mm-hmm. for example, an organization says, we need to have everybody in the office on Monday. For those that live close to an office, to create that pro-social environment, or maybe mm-hmm. it's Monday and Thursday or a couple days a week, but giving people the flexibility to work from home or work from the office. But employees will also have to kind of commit to a way of performing, to set expectations so that organizations know what to expect and leaders know how to prepare their organization. Mm-hmm. So if people are in the office every day on Monday, well, that's when you're going to have staff meetings and one-on-ones and where you can benefit from the social engagement face-to-face, but also give people the flexibility who have social circumstances beyond their control that might need them to work from home or just work better from home and bring them their best selves to work every day by working from home. The organization can only benefit from that.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. I think, and it's one thing that I feel would also benefit the organization is giving a bigger time frame of, hey, we are going to start requiring people coming back into the office. You know, we might separate it. It may be by departments. When the pandemic started, it was work from home, figure it all out. And it, you know, everybody was with schools being shut down. It was, oh my gosh, what do we do and how do we make this happen? Now it's going to be the opposite. If you say, all right, you've got 2 weeks to get your affairs together so you can get back into the office, that may not be enough. You know, some people have gotten to where they don't have a babysitter or they don't have a caretaker or nurse or nurses or whatever's going on for whatever families within the house. Organizations would benefit from giving enough notice. What that would look like, I do not know, but enough notice so that families can prepare for another change around.
Well, those organizations that already had strong work from home policies, think of the big tech companies, for example, that mm-hmm. already have people all over the place and already very comfortable with flexible work arrangements, they didn't have to scramble as much. And they were already prepared. And these are organizations where younger employees try to flock to work. You think of Tesla and Google and Amazon for the administrative staff. Obviously, the folks that work in warehouses don't have the choice.
The luxury.
You know, as you think about departments, if you have two departments that are sitting by each other, you have finance and say marketing, and both of them have the opportunity to work from home. A manager or a leader over an a department may say, just work from home, it's fine. And another, you know, the neighboring organization may say, I need everybody in the office every day. There is no work from home. Mm-hmm. That could create some real challenges as well. There has to be some organizational structure around this, some consistency in the organization so that an organization knows what they're going to get. How do you think an organization can prepare for that?
I believe it would start from understanding, maybe prioritizing, not prioritizing which department is more important, but prioritizing which department would benefit more from coming into the office. That might be a way to start. So, you know, obviously, like you said, everyone in the warehouse has to be there. What would be the next step, I guess, if everyone in the warehouse has to be in the office? Who are the next people that they work in line with? So maybe they would be the ones to either be there on a more consistent basis once a week, whatever, you know, C-suite level or managers come together as a collective on who goes in and who doesn't. Also, it would benefit understanding people's level of fear around going back into the office. If, you know, again, if people are fearful, work may be, you know, spotty or not as productive as what they were doing back home. And it would be, it would definitely come in handy for this is the policy. Each team is going to have this. Set it not fully in stone, but be consistent as well as have areas for flexibility. You know, COVID, you know, the pandemic has not ended. So if you find out that, you know, the people that were there on Thursday, someone came down with COVID, maybe the people that are there on Friday don't come in. We need to clean up, you know, get it sanitized, what have you. So it would definitely be flexibility would be extremely important.
And really, this is a cultural expectation that an organization is defining. How do we work together? Do we require everyone to be in the office or not? And then that has to be backed up by policy. Mm-hmm. There will be leaders in organizations individually that are extremely untrusting of their teams. And their being untrusting of their teams may drive the want to have their people close or to have cameras on the whole time while people are working at home. Mm-hmm. Organizations have to be really clear around what the organization culture is going to be when it comes to working from home and insist that leaders adopt that practice and they can't just go it alone and go a different way. Or again, they run the risk of increasing turnover and driving otherwise good employees to go work for organizations that do get it and do it the right way.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Yeah, the old way is now officially the old way.
Yeah.
And I think there's a now way. Here's pandemic just got kind of dropped on us. Here you go, figure it out. And there will be whatever we would constitute. Everybody's going to have a different definition of what post-COVID is. But post-COVID, that's going to be another way. Because post-COVID, for me, definition would be the numbers are so low. You know, it's very rare that you hear of a case of someone, you know, kind of like the Spanish flu or something that would come out. Nobody gets it really. Every once in a while you hear of someone getting it. And that would be a new way of doing things. Because then maybe people can come back into the office. You know, right now it's still a lot of companies are stay home, stay home, stay home. If you can stay home, stay home.
Right.
So there's going to, it's the old way, the now way, and whatever the new way. So it's going to be stages of change and adopting, you know, depending on, as you talk about the culture, it's adopting maybe some of our old culture beliefs and values, but it's changed, but then it's changing in with how we conduct business now.
Yeah. And I think the way you laid it out is an important distinction, that there is the old way, there is dealing with the pandemic, and then there is the true post-pandemic as you start to normalize back into a world where it's the new normal. We're still clearly not in the new normal, not until we get herd immunity and people develop a level of comfort of walking back into the office without potentially harming their families or harming themselves. So given that, organizations have to think about transition. The change itself is going to weigh heavily on people's minds. Leaders are certainly dealing with an uncertain future and trying to lay out plans to adopt what the new normal is going to look like. And for those organizations who aren't planning for what the new normal could look like, they are going to have it defined for them and going to be in serious trouble as leaders of organizations if they don't take control and have an active strategy for trying to define how they're going to approach the new world. Frankly, if their competitors are prepared, they're going to eat their lunch.
Absolutely. It's the competitive advantage, you know, a company getting competitive advantage is going to change even more. You know, there's engaged employees, it's having, you know, high brand recognition. It's having, you know, now with companies doing, hey, we have these little quiet spaces in our offices and, you know, we provide lunch and daycare, you know, care, you know, there's a lot with the competitive advantage because the more you give to the employees, you know, and you hope that they're going to produce more for you and then gets you in your competitive advantage. Now it's going to be, how are you going to take care of us mental health is one thing, but in a health wise, how are you going to try to ensure as much as possible that we don't get sick if you're requiring us to come back into the office or not requiring us? You know, how are you coming up with this plan? And do I feel good with it so that I can proudly say, I work for this particular organization and they took care of us. They say, they give us the opportunity to come into the office, or they say, don't worry about it. You can work from home, you know, as long as your production levels are up.
That brings us back to strategic planning and how organizations can prepare post-pandemic. Organizations have to be thinking now about what the world is going to look like. And there's a lot of uncertainty about what the world's going to look like. So there has to be flexibility in those plans. Senior leaders need to be using strategy sessions to try to predict what the future is going to look like and how they can prepare for a new competitive landscape. Organizations have folded. Traditional competitors may have adapted to the pandemic, both in attracting customers, in keeping employees, in products that they may have developed. And organizations who are not thinking about the competitive landscape and the way they're going to treat their employees and how they're going to treat their customers in this post-pandemic world.
It's a lot of ands.
It is. How are they going to fall behind if their competitors are thinking this way and are prepared and flexible for the future? You have the opportunity to hand all of your customers and your longstanding relationships over to your competitor if you're not prepared for what the future is going to look like and what those customers need. So there are strategies out there to plan for that future, to create. I think of game theory, for example. Game theory is with a skilled facilitator will allow organizations to think through the possibilities of where the competitive landscape is going and how to adapt to an uncertain future. Once that uncertain future becomes more certain, then if you've thought about all of the potential possibilities and you have a mindset for strategic thinking, then you can be prepared for that future. But the challenge is that employees are not comfortable with an uncertain future. There is mm-hmm. a certain level of certainty that employees will need in their day-to-day working environment. And they're going to want, leaders are going to have to prepare employees for an uncertain future. But this brings me to the thought of all of those strategic change initiatives that organizations have had in the pipeline prior to the pandemic, in the before times, when they had to be put on hold because they had more pressing issues. Mm-hmm. And can organizations go back and really expect, when the pandemic is over and you're approaching that new normal, should organizations expect that the same amount that employees can go back and pick up where they left off on those change initiatives? I don't know. What do you think, Dr. K?
If the company was going to just bring the strategic plan in that we had prior to COVID, I think that that would just be foolish across the board. Nothing is the same anymore. But I believe it would be beneficial to look at it and go, that definitely has to go out. Let's change this. How can we implement this to have people work from home? Does this save? Maybe some of the strategies might be about getting rid of certain office buildings. And if you're in a rental, you know, agreement, maybe, you know, if you're close to the end of the rental agreement, changing those agreements up.
Right.
But not getting rid of the initiatives because they were planned and they had to have something good in them. I don't know. What do you think on that?
I agree. A great place to start is the existing strategy and have a mm-hmm. look. But prioritization is really the key. Organizations just have a tendency in general to overburden their strategic plan with change initiatives and frankly just hope that they all get done. When you have too many change initiatives, organizations tend to not get anything done. It's like at home when your to-do list is just way too long and you try to work a little bit on everything, you don't actually finish anything. So prioritizing and having a very, very clear path of prioritization in your strategic plan is important. It's a great place to start, as you mentioned. Going forward, the employees are probably going to need some stability over time. All of this has been a level of continuous change over the past 12 months, and that feeling of change and uncertainty is probably going to extend 12 months after mm-hmm. you know, pandemic is over, as people yeah. become vaccinated and stability and the world starts to open up again, which mm-hmm. may be in 6 months or it may be in 26 months. We're not sure yet. Right. Employees are going to need a stable environment for some period of time. And as soon as we define and somebody stands up in an organization and says, the pandemic's over, we're getting back to work, we can't just jump in and drive ourselves to the pre-pandemic state of thinking and say, okay, we're going to pick up all these past strategic initiatives and we're just going to start working on them. But we have to go twice as fast because we've lost a year and a half. That's just not going to work for organizations. Mm-hmm. Employees will suffer change fatigue and make mistakes, and your core business operations will likely suffer as a result. And both your organization and your customers won't be able to prepare for that. This is a perfect time to rethink your strategic plan, prioritize effectively, and define what is your organization's capacity for change and your team's capacity for change, and how can you initiate change in a way that's not going to overwhelm your employees and, frankly, your customers, because an unfocused change strategy is not going to take your organization in the direction that you think it should.
Question for you, what do you think would be beneficial for the employees? If you don't have employees, you don't have a company. So what do you think would be one of the first things for leadership's C-suite level to help create a safety in change for employees?
I think one thing that leaders collectively do very poorly is they exert a sense of overconfidence in the future that frankly undermines a leader's credibility. An a leader will often feel the burden of trying to provide answers to their team and will say, we've got this all under control. We've thought about it. This is where we're going, and apply a level of certainty to their statements that is just frankly impossible for any one leader or one leadership team to know. I think it's really important for leaders to say collectively, we don't know what the future holds. We have some ideas. We've thought about a couple of opportunities that in directions that it could go, but frankly, we're not sure. Nobody's sure. And it's completely okay for leaders to display that level of humility and say, we don't know. And I think most importantly is engage the teams in trying to chart that path. The more collective wisdom that you can bring to a problem, the insights that you're going to bring. There are going to be some employees that bring some rock star ideas. There are going to be some employees that bring crazy ideas. But out of those crazy ideas or rock star ideas, there could be a kernel of something that could be built upon to help clarify a strategy or bring up a perspective or a point of view that your customers may be thinking about that you as an organization are not thinking about. So transparency about the uncertainty is important. Engaging people regularly is important. And just, I really think that transparency is the clearest way to make employees feel comfortable with an uncomfortable future. If you bring certainty and confidence about your direction, there are going to be employees going, how could he possibly know or she possibly know that that's the future? Or when a future materializes that is different than what that leader said, then that leader has lost credibility.
Yeah, I think I would agree, especially on the authenticity, the transparency. It definitely would, it would create a collective whole. People would, you know, employees would, okay, we know what's going on. Okay, they just updated us instead of going, oh my gosh, what's going on? Where's the update? Waiting for the email, waiting for the phone call. I think it would be beneficial to have an idea of where we are going instead of, well, we, you know, we kind of have this idea, but then it could change, da da da. Have an idea of where you are going so that there is, you know, metaphorically speaking, the light at the end of the tunnel. We just don't know what path down the tunnel we're exactly going to take, because that's where those changes might come in.
Yeah, I think you've got to have a very clear strategic plan. And that plan has to be aligned with your mission and vision of your organization. Yes. You may have to go back and reevaluate your mission and your vision of your organization and that strategic plan to prepare for a post-COVID world. But that should be clear. Now, many C-suite executives and executives within organizations are very comfortable with the strategic planning process. And that strategic planning process has people coming together and talking about all the potential and narrowing down on an agreed strategy. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's impossible to have a fully fleshed out agreed strategy.
Agreed.
Executives are probably saying it could go this way. If they're not, they need to be having these conversations. But these conversations need to be, it could go this way, or it could go that way, or it could be somewhere in between. And that is a part of the strategic planning process that frontline employees don't generally see. Organizations like to solidify around a strategic plan and then decide and announce and bring that to their teams. I think in this world, in this post-pandemic world where there is so much uncertainty, it is perfectly okay and probably even beneficial for senior leaders to say, we have this breadth of idea of where our strategic plan is going. We want to be transparent that we're not quite sure where it's going yet. So our strategic vision could be this way or it could be this way. Right now, we're charting the path that it's this way, but we would really appreciate your perspectives on, within this range of potential, where do you think it's going? What do you see in engaging with your fellow employees, with your customers, and as people who go out and shop every day or engage with the world in a bigger perspective? Are we missing something? And crowdsource some of the refinement of where that strategic plan could go, and also be transparent that even though we're charting out on this path, it could go this way, or we might have to go a completely different mm-hmm. direction 6 months from now, given where the market goes or where the mm-hmm. where circumstances may change us, where our customers dictate that we would mm-hmm. go.
No, I would absolutely agree. It's going to take, and this might become difficult, but it's going to be important for everyone in the organization to have room for flexibility. Here is our plan. This is where we want to go. Here we are, we're cruising along, and then something else happens and we have to take a quick left. And then something else happens and we go right, then back to left. You know, there's going to need to be room again for that flexibility, but there's going to be an important element of communication on the flexibility. How are you guys feeling? You know, I think it would be important to talk to the employees a little bit more. Okay, we were down this path and we had to take a quick left. What do you think about this way? Are we missing something that we probably or should have, could have, would have taken from if we had gone to the right?
Right.
So the amount of communication during this time, I believe, would be very beneficial to the whole entire team together.
Yeah, and every team is made up of people, and every person has a different capacity for mm-hmm. change and mm-hmm. the different desire for change. Some employees hate change and just want to come into work and know that there's certainty around the job that they're doing and their future. And then there are people who absolutely love change and try to create change in every opportunity that they have. And having a clear understanding of the components of your team, which individuals are ready and able to deal with that level of ambiguity or not, is really important. Which teams have the capacity to deal with that level of ambiguity that you just mentioned or not? And sometimes you have to bring in outside folks to help gauge that change, experts who drive, who can dig in and really use scientific tools to help lay out where those opportunities are and help prepare an organization for that level of uncertainty, because mm-hmm. not all organizations are created differently, and they're all created with different levels of, and even within an organization, every team has a different capacity for innovation and change and uncertainty.
It's going to be a lot of, to some extent, experimental trials. It's going to be trial and error. But that doesn't mean that the organization is doing bad. That doesn't mean that the organization is in a tough space if they're in trial and error. We weren't prepared for this. We don't know how to deal with this. No company was like, oh my gosh, okay, here's our pandemic strategy. If it happens, we'll just, you know, tuck that and then pull that out. So it's right. going to be a lot of trial and error. And I believe maybe at some point there could be some parts that every organization, whether large or small, would be able to use. But I think each organization is going to have to individualize it, the trial and errors and the experiments and all of that, to the company itself, because each one has their own atmosphere. Each one has their own culture. They're all, even if it's Amazon and, you know, another big company that sells stuff, you know, they might be able to use a couple of the same things, but with Amazon's, being gigantic and maybe let's say Etsy being smaller, there's going to be things that are going to change. That's going to be different. There might be some elements across the board that are useful. However, each company is going to have to individualize it.
Great wisdom, Dr. K.
So Dr. D, how can leaders prepare?
Well, Dr. K, I think it's important to plan for consistency across departments and your organization. It's important also to be clear and transparent and flexible with your teams. update policies to account for risks and potential pitfalls. Having the documentation and allows for people across the organization to really feel confident in what they should and should not be doing, what's in and out of bounds for someone. Recognize everyone processes change differently and may have unique circumstances to be met with understanding and empathy. Turnover risk at this time is going to be high. If you push your teams too hard, or you have leaders who have unreasonable expectations or don't empathize with their team members or with their fellow coworkers, you're running the risk of alienating team members. And remember, your customers and competitors have all experienced the same disruption as your organization. You can chart a new strategically advantaged path to support your customers and disrupt your competition. So prioritize carefully. Use strategies like game theory and war room planning to identify the paths to what's coming next. So Dr. Kate, what's on tap for next week?
Well, in part two of our workplace post-COVID series, we'll be discussing the psychological, sociological, and emotional impacts of dealing with the aftermath of COVID and acclimating to change as we face adjusting to the new normal, whatever that may be.
Yeah, wonderful. I'm excited about that topic and continuing the conversation. And to all of you joining us on this journey to the realm, thanks so much. I'm Dr. D.
And I'm Dr. K, and we are looking forward to your next visit to the executive realm.